It's Easter long weekend 2019. I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is Tasting Room Radio. Before we get to our Merlot special, here's an update on shows upcoming. Vintage 2019, featuring Senka Tennant from Terra Vista, Grant Stanley from Spearhead, Howard Soon from Vanessa, and Bailey Williamson from Blue Grouse in the Cowichan Valley. Then Meet the Makers in Victoria, pouring our Kristen Needham from Seasider, Jenny Garlini from Blue Grouse, the winemaker at Stags Hollow, Kira LaFranc. From Roche Wine on the Naramata Bench, Penelope Roche, the co-winemaker and co-owner. From Fitzpatrick Family Wines, Gordon Fitzpatrick. There's a new name out there, Rico Bambino. Sebastian Oat is the winemaker. And from the award-winning Sheringham Distillery, Jason McIsaac from Shirley, just outside of Souk. We're also going to spend time with a visit to Blue Grouse, Colin Linden, singer-songwriter from Blackie and the Rodeo Kings, is going to come along and talk about music and especially about wine. And next week on Tasting Room Radio, we'll head for Calgary to Dean House, where we're going to find Ben Bryant, the chief winemaker at Mission Hill. That's upcoming on Tasting Room Radio. You can find the details at tastingroomradio.com. But before all that, let's find out the status of Merlot in the Okanagan Valley. I can't remember where the Merlot idea came from. I'm sure it was in the middle of an interview. Someone said something that sort of struck my brainstem, and that was that Merlot had been the darling of the wine world for so many years. In France, of course, Merlot was king. You know what? I think it was some of the interviews I was doing around Sideways. Just stay with me for a second. I think it was the author of the book who said the Merlot that California was making was absolutely god-awful. That's why Merlot took such a slap upside the head from Sideways. So in order to start this one-hour discussion and put everything in proper perspective, we're going to start off with Alexander Payne, the director of Sideways. I was doing interviews for his last film called Nebraska. I told him going in, I said, I've got to ask you about Sideways. Just give me 2 minutes for my Tasting Room Radio. Okay, we did. And basically I said, what happened? How did this come about? Why did Merlot get such a bad rap? So the first voice you'll hear will be Alexander Payne, the director of Sideways. Reese Pender, master of wine, winemaker, and a wine educator. Mary McDermott is the winemaker at Township 7. Mike Rathen is the former owner and now the GM of Township 7 on the Naramata Bench. We'll also talk to Phil McGann, the winemaker at Checkmate in the Okanagan. From Ex Nihilo, Jeff Harder will be here. Peter Lindenlob will talk about the Wagner family Merlot in California. Kane Morgan from Rust Wine Company and Joseph Luckhurst from Road 13, all making Merlot in the South Okanagan. And we're going to finish off with Larry Jarellis from Stags Hollow, who totally committed to Merlot many years ago, and Rob Summers from Hester Creek. We're talking Merlot on this show. We start with the director of Sideways, Alexander Payne. He gave us The Descendants. He gave us Sideways. All right, let me ask you a couple of things about Sideways for Tasting Room Radio. You love your wine, don't you?
Yes, I do. I love your wine, too.
Wow, wonderful. When Miles talks about Pinot Noir, he talks about the passion of Pinot Noir, and sales rose by like 20%. Was that your voice talking about your favorite wine?
The speech about Pinot Noir that he says alone on that porch with Virginia Madsen, that largely came from the writer of the book, Rex Pickett.
Right.
I wrote her speech where she talks about why she likes wine. That was I speaking.
It's the life of wine, how it's a living thing, what was going on there, the people who picked them. The bottle of wine is literally alive. I loved that speech, and it struck me right in the heart.
Yeah. That's a personal speech. And also I put into that character's mouth, he asks her, what's the wine that did it for you, that really turned you on? And she says an 88 Sassicaia, and that's exactly the wine that turned me on to wine.
And why did that one bottle that he loved so much that he has at the end, Miles has, the 61 Chateau Cheval Blanc, why that bottle?
I don't know. I was born in 1961, so mm-hmm. There's a little bit of a reference there. It was a good year for people. Our president is 1961. My best friends are 1961, and it was, I say, it was a great year in Bordeaux. And I don't know. Cheval Blanc just felt right. Also, curiously, I think it's Merlot and Cabernet Franc.
That's right.
So it was a bit of an antidote, and an unspoken antidote to the famous Merlot joke in the film.
He didn't like Merlot, and he'd said...
Well, he doesn't like Merlot, like how he didn't like Chardonnay when, you know, he was just... He's not making so much fun of the grape as he is of people who know nothing about wine, who when asked, what kind of wine do you want? Oh, I don't know, Merlot. Oh, I don't know, Chardonnay. So for years, it was ABC, anything but Chardonnay.
Right.
And then after Sideways, it was ABM.
This is Tasting Room Radio. A home for passionate fans of food, wine, and friends.
This is our Merlot special. And if you ask me why I'm doing a Merlot special, because I don't have a lot of Merlot hanging around here. I thought it was getting taken for granted. And it's a fabulous grape. And when Merlot is right, it's phenomenal. And of course, this all stems from Sideways of many years ago. I don't think Merlot has ever recovered from the slap it took upside the head. I have on the line Master of Wine and the man who runs Wine Plus, the wine education entity in British Columbia. He's Reese Pender, my fishing pal. Reese?
Hey, Terry. How's it going?
Okay, so am I totally full of shit when I talk about Merlot, the state of Merlot, the attitude about Merlot? Is it getting shortchanged these days?
Yeah, Merlot is a really tricky one because, I mean, it's still by far and away the most planted grape in British Columbia, but it hasn't increased in plantings for about 10 years. So it sort of, you know, reached a plateau and then has kind of stagnated there. And, you know, I think, you know, I've often said that I wonder if people put as much effort into making Merlot as they do to something like Pinot Noir, if it might be actually really good. So, but there are definitely some good ones, and it just, I think it comes a lot down to style.
Ah, style. Let's talk about style. Let's just take three styles, for example. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it comes down to picking decisions. So how ripe do you want these grapes to be? And also down to oak treatment. And one of the things I find is in the picking decisions is there's this mentality that more is better. Leave it on later, bigger alcohol, fuller, you know, bigger wine. And I just don't think that works all that well in our climate. You know, often doing that, you end up getting some pretty harsh tannins and, you know, boozy wines that go along with that and just lose all that beautiful freshness and elegance and acidity, you know, freshness that we naturally get here. So I think that's one of the challenges. And then we also have this massive tendency just to oak everything to death here still. Again, I don't know why. It costs a lot of money, makes the wine worse, and it's just a bit of this old-fashioned mentality, bigger, better, fuller, richer, and I don't think it is. And, you know, we're starting to see some of the wineries really pull back on both of these things. So they're picking the wine a little bit fresher. They're using less oak, or not less new oak anyway, and making wines that are much more fresh and elegant. And so, yeah, I've noticed in judging competitions that the number of Merlots winning medals is actually kind of increasing because they're, you know, the wines are getting better.
What do we, the wine consumer, what kind of Merlot are we looking for these days from BC?
Well, I think everyone's looking for something different, and that's why wineries do it. But I'm also a big believer that, you know, we create our own market, and if we just keep slapping over-oaked, over-ripened, massive wines at people, then, you know, that's what they think we make, and it's pretty hard to change that. But I think if you look at our climate and what we naturally do well, it's wines that are fresher and more elegant with a bit of light juiciness. And, you know, we need to, as producers, I think, change a little bit towards that style, educate the consumers, and we'll make better wines.
He's Reese Pender, by the way, from Wine Plus and Master of Wine. He knows of what he speaks. Let's talk about three styles of Merlot. Michael Barche, for example, makes Merlot, and we're going to be talking to him. Tell me about his style.
Yeah, I love the Barche Brothers Merlot. It's from a single vineyard site there down in Oliver, and you know, Barche is one of the, like, I think a lot of people should follow along in what he's doing. He's really trying to let the place speak in the wine, so he's not trying to over-ripen it, doesn't, you know, uses not very much oak, and just lets the fruit speak, and it's a really elegant, fresh, juicy Merlot, but it's not, you know, that doesn't mean it's weak or light or anything. It's just got a lot of complexity, a lot of flavor, you know, tastes like where it's from, and it's just beautifully balanced, elegant wine. And so he's really kind of going for that, just, you know, not underripe, not overripe, just beautiful balanced style.
Hey, Reese, is that New World style that he's making, or Old World?
I think it's our world. We sort of fit somewhere in between. We have elements of the old and elements of the new world in here in what we can do best, I think. And, you know, I think winemakers like Bartier are really on the forefront of realizing that and trying to make a wine that's true Okanagan or BC rather than, you know, trying to be an old world or trying to be a new world. And that's when we make our best. We realize we've got this beautiful, fresh acidity, juiciness, vibrancy. And if we're not embracing that, then what's the point?
How about the Naramata bench?
Yeah, so another one I really like is Van Westen's Merlot. I think it goes under the Vive la Vie name there. Very intense, concentrated Merlot, but still has this beautiful floral elements and elegance to it, and falls somewhere in that middle of the range in terms of richness. And I think it's year after year, it's a really consistently top quality wine. And when I'm saying this lighter style is good, I'm not also saying that, you know, you can't do some of the richer ones, because I think some wineries do pull it off without being over the top and overdone as well, right? For me, one that year in, year out seems to produce consistently is the Burrowing Owl. Pretty hot site down there, but they do make a big full-bodied wine, but it still retains some of that, you know, South Okanagan dried herbal character and a bit of freshness, and the tannins are ripe, even though it's quite full-bodied.
He's Rhys Bender, the Wine Plus guy in British Columbia. He is a master of wine, a good friend of the show, and one of the partners in Little Farm in the Similkameen Valley. One of the first judgments of BC involved Merlot. What do you remember about that judging, and any surprises there about our Merlot?
Oh, yeah. Gonna think back a bit. Yeah, well, I think, you know, I believe it was the Checkmate.
That's right. It was Checkmate.
Ended up coming up on top. So, I mean, that shows we can make some pretty decent wines, and there was some pretty stiff international competition in there. So, you know, we can definitely stand up. I just think we need to kind of hone in a little bit on our style. So, not just the Merlot, but some of the other varieties as well. The Cabernet Franc is another one that I know you love, but
yep,
maybe that's another show. Yeah. Yeah. I just think kind of letting letting our climate and terroir show through a little bit on some of these Merlots might in the long run be a really good thing that would engage with customers and, you know, end up making better wine.
Now you're based in the Similkameen. So how does Merlot in the Similkameen get along?
It does pretty well for Jordan. Similkameen, you just tend to get a little bit more of the sort of elegant and fresher style than in the South Okanagan. But a lot of the grapes are blended. You know, Clos de Soleil does some lovely wine, Orofino as well with the Merlot there as well.
Okay. Thank you, Rhys.
Thanks very much, Terry. We'll catch up with you soon.
He's Rhys Bender. He's the Wine Plus guy in British Columbia. And also, he is a master of wine, a good friend of the show, and one of the partners in Little Farm in the Similkameen Valley.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio.
Thank you, Rhys Bender. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. You can stream this show on our website, tastingroomradio.com. We are a Google podcast, and we are an Apple podcast. And when you get there, if you like what you hear, please subscribe. One of the wineries in the Okanagan, specifically the Naramata Bench, that made a huge commitment to Merlot was Township 7. Here's a couple of quick comments. One from Mary McDermott, the winemaker at Township 7, and Mike Rathen, who was the owner who really made this label fly. He has sold, of course. He and his partner sold. And he retains his position as GM at Township 7. Winemaker Mary McDermott, General Manager of Township 7, Mike Rathen.
I'm going to do a Merlot special because it's still getting bad knocks for Sideways. And I don't understand it. It's one of the great wines of the world.
It is a beautiful wine. And this one in particular was the individual barrel selection chosen because of the intensity of the wines that was produced. So it's not some wimpy Merlot that from Sideways. It's definitely intense and big and full and luscious. You'll see when you taste it.
What's going on with Merlot in the world, in the wine world? It got smacked around horribly. Is it making a comeback, and how is it doing that?
Well, yeah, it's making a comeback in my opinion, but Wine Spectator last year gave Duckhorn its top wine, and it was a Merlot in the world. And, you know, for what Wine Spectator's worth, I mean, they're obviously, they spend a lot of time doing it. But I think... I've been a Merlot fan. It's actually one of the reasons I bought Township 7 in 2006 is because I tasted our Merlot and I went, you're kidding me. An Okanagan Merlot can taste like this. And we've made a great Merlot. I think the Merlot in the Okanagan is special, and we should be celebrating it. I know we do great Pinot Noir, but I think what set us up and is Merlot's, it's special. It's black cherry. It's spice that you don't get a lot of other places. It's not flabby. It's just a great wine.
And that's clone 181 that you have there from Pomerol.
Yes, it is.
Why wouldn't it be great wine? Thank you for this.
Yeah. You're welcome.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio was brought to you by Bench 1775. And they're very happy to announce that they have opened their tasting room for the year. They have a library release of a 2013 Pinot Noir, along with their new Pinot Gris and the new Viognier and Chill. All the details at bench1775.com. The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Canada's number one winery, Road 13. It's time to book your dinner with Backyard Farms and Road 13. Amazing artisan wines with four-course meals prepared by Chef Chris Van Hooydonk of Backyard Farms. May 4, July 27, August 17, September 28, and October the 5th. All the details at road13vineyards.com. My name is Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio, and this is our Merlot special. I think I've given you kind of the history on it, but I thought I'd tell my guest, Phil McCann, who's the winemaker and the general manager at Checkmate on the Golden Mile Bench. Phil, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
I thought Merlot was getting shortchanged, not so much at your winery, because you have lots of Merlot, but in general. I realized that Sideways had come and gone, and there had been a drop in sales and prestige, but I kept waiting for really good Merlot to make a comeback. It's there, but it's not getting the same sort of respect that I see from Pinot Noir or maybe of Syrah in the South Okanagan. Am I correct on this, or do you not feel that?
I think I understand your point of view there. I think Merlot used to get a lot of press back in the 90s and early 2000s, and perhaps it was a little oversold back in those days in terms of the advertising and things like that. And there's a tendency in some of the warmer areas that Merlot can be quite kind of simple and fruity from warmer areas. But and I think that whole Sideways effect came in. And it's interesting, that movie, because it's quite ironic, because the wine that he really covets the most is a Merlot-based wine. So it was a Cheval Blanc, so Cheval Blanc, it was right. Still Merlot and Cabernet Franc. So there's a certain irony to that movie that I think a lot of people kind of missed. But yeah, I think we're starting to get some good publicity with Merlot again here. I think it is the most planted grape in the South Okanagan, and I think a lot of people see it maybe as perhaps a workhorse at times, but it's much more than that. And up here, where the vines are pushed, you know, much more so than they are, say, down in California, you tend to make more complex wines, I feel, because of that.
Yeah. I actually talked to the director of that film a couple of years later, and I just said, how did that all come about, that whole Merlot thing? He said, it's basically because they were making crap Merlot in large quantities in California. And I felt that I wanted to say something about that, which he did, of course.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think there is a truth in that. And I think that goes to what I was kind of saying earlier, that there was really a flood of Merlot, and a lot of it wasn't particularly, you know, super high-end. So, yeah.
Philip McGann is the winemaker and general manager at Checkmate Vineyards in the South Okanagan. You are growing and bottling and releasing Chardonnay, multiple Chardonnays, and multiple Merlots. Is that because that's what wants to grow there? That's your strongest statement?
Yeah, it is. Chardonnay was really the impetus for the winery to start, because there's two old blocks side by side, the old Combray property and the old De Claver property, both planted in the mid-1970s. And then we really thought long and hard about what would be the best red variety to produce at the winery. Obviously, we felt that Pinot Noir doesn't do as well down here in the south. Right. It doesn't like the little extra heat that we get here in July, August, and it doesn't particularly like sandy soils, which tend to dominate, especially on the black sage and the Soyuz Lake benches. The Golden Mile is a little different. So then it really became, do we focus on Syrah, do we focus on Merlot, or Cabernet-based wines? And we felt that between the vineyards I could have access to, the sites and also the varieties that Merlot is the most consistent year in, year out. It's a little more cold hardy than Syrah, and it ripens, you know, it gets ripe every year, whether it be a cool year or a warmer year. So we felt we could produce the most consistent kind of wines to the level that we want to achieve with that variety.
How many different Merlots are you making?
Four. So we do four different ones. One, they're really kind of two pairings. The first, they all have a Chastain name. The first one is, in my mind, it is Eastern Benches. So it's a blend of fruit from Black Sage Bench and a Soyuz Lake Bench.
Right.
And we call that end game. And then it's contrasted with a wine that is sourced from the western side of the valley, so from the cooler sites. But you have a lot of variety in soils on the western side, whereas on the eastern side, they tend to be mostly sandy soil.
Philip McGann is the winemaker and general manager at Checkmate Vineyards in the South Okanagan. All right, Silent Bishop is fully west side, 12 barrels. Stop me when I go wrong here. Opening Gambit, Osoyoos East Bank, sandy soils, 13 barrels. And yep. Black Rook, 9 barrels, totally from Black Sage Bench.
That's right. Yeah. From so the second pairing, which is the Opening Gambit and Black Rook, are really contrasting the two benches that are quite well known within the South Okanagan. They're not official sub-appellations. Hopefully, in time they will be
sure.
In some sort of form or the other. Whether they have the same name, time will tell. But yeah, what I noticed in those two benches is that down at Osoyoos, which is where Opening Gambit's from, you tend to get very fine sandy soils there. They're almost like sands in an hourglass. You could almost put them through an hourglass.
Mm.
So you're not getting a lot of, you're not getting an overabundance of character from the soil, but what you're getting is a lot of purity of fruit from the vine and the fruit itself. So you get these beautiful kind of cassis and blackcurrant characters coming through there, and also very nice structured tannins. And that's and as you go north along to Black Sage Bench, you move away from the lake. It's a colder site. The vines struggle more because there's more frost days, and it gets really cold there in winter. It can get to minus 20 degrees there in winter. But you get more of this spice character coming through. And in the Black Rook, it really comes through as kind of licorice or aniseed. That really is in character with the soils. And as before that area was planted, it was known obviously as Black Sage Bench. So you kind of get this sagebrush kind of savory and spice character coming through.
Okay. it's time for a speed round here, Phil. First of all, what should a great Merlot, what are the properties of a great Merlot on the nose, on the palate? What should they be?
I think if you can run the gambit between the herbal notes and the ripe notes, I think is one aspect. I think and that to me, when you have those dueling characteristics, and a wine, if it can run the cusp between the two, it really gives a lot of complexity to the wine and to the nose. It keeps you coming back. On the palate, I think freshness is important. Not to over-accentuate the tannins, but enough freshness to allow the tannins to express themselves, to
sure.
not be pasty, but fresh. And also the fruit characteristics coming through. So to me, you need that. I think if you can get the red fruits are great, but if you can get some different kind of, also the darker fruits coming through, I think that's important. And I really like it when we get black cherry and hints of cassis and those kind of characters coming through. So... and also, you get nice spice characters too with Merlot, which I think, if you look at some of the Italian examples, they really do get that savory
okay.
kind of spice character coming through. So,
He is Philip McGann, the winemaker and general manager at Checkmate Winery in the South Okanagan in the Black Sage area, and certainly in the Golden Mile. Okay, three best in the world.
Three best
Merlots
in the world.
Three best Merlots in the world.
That's a tough question. I think the ones that stand out for me when I've tried them, the Trotte Noir, which is from Bordeaux, from the right bank, was
right.
pretty exceptional to try. I've only tried Petrus once. I don't really have the cachet to pull in those that often, but when I did, it was it certainly stood out. It was an incredibly interesting wine. I think Masetto is another great example, especially the Italian style. there was a, in terms of what influenced me the most, there was a Merlot, you know, back in my formative years that I tried back in the, an Australian Merlot from Margaret River from Brooklyn Valley. And I remember it was the first time that I ever really tried a complex Merlot. And it had that real cigar box character that to me was, I'd never really come across in a, especially an Australian wine before. So that was a wine that was very influential to me.
Okay, and the point I'm trying to make here, Phil, is that on average, how much are those wines, on average?
Oh, they're very expensive. I think Macedo is around. I think it's anywhere $300 to $500. I think Petrus. Sure. I don't know. It's it's way up there, about $1,000, $1,500 a bottle.
Okay.
Angela, Trotter Noir, I think, is again quite expensive. So.
Okay.
So, yeah, but generally they are. They're quite expensive.
And the point I'm trying to make here is that this is a wine that, given time and space and expertise and love, and God knows what the weather will throw at us, will get better and better and better. And it's $85. They're all $85. And
that's true, yeah.
And when you say to yourself, that's a lot of money for a BC Merlot, the way it was made, the care, the love that went into it, the expertise, all of that went into making this the best possible bottle of wine that you could make.
Oh, absolutely. No, we do a lot of techniques that, you know, pushing boundaries, do very extended skin contact up to 50 to 55 days, which really, I think, provides the signature and the framework for our Merlots, which it takes a bit of nerve to do that. They're all natural ferments as well. And then we do, you know, pretty extended barrel aging, you know, up to 21 months in the finest French oak that we can get. We only use three-year season French oak. So if you think about the techniques we're using, they're techniques that, you know, some of these famous houses around the world that are also employing. So, yeah. So.
And so what are your next releases? What's coming?
The next releases will be the 2015 Merlots. They should be out sometime in the new year. We haven't actually set a date for them yet, but I'd be hoping to some extent they'll be out in the spring of 2015. And again, a very warm year, the 2015 year, but also a year that has a lot of, you know, a lot of character, beautiful fruit, and great texture as well. So, yeah, I'll be excited to see them come out.
What you and I have in common is that I'm going to be back judging the Judgment of BC again this year in Kelowna. And last year, your checkmate took top prize in the Merlot. And I wonder, what does it mean to you to win a competition like that?
Oh, it was very humbling for us to achieve that in our first year. That was our debut year, 2013, was really a wonderful accomplishment for us. And it really did help put our Merlots on the map. And it's safe to say that wine safely sold out. It's still a little bit available in Magnum, but all the 750s are gone.
Okay.
And we have just a little bit for a library, but that's about all we have. So, but no, it was a wonderful thing for us, and I was really, really quite taken back that we were so successful.
Were you also at the pour for your Chardonnays in at the Canoe Restaurant in Toronto?
Yep.
So you, six Chardonnays of yours, 2014s, against Chardonnays from Burgundy and Sonoma and Mendoza, Argentina. You did very well. Did you take top prize?
I think we finished equal top with other wines, and we generally we did that. I did that tasting, replicated that tasting, I think, four times.
Mm-hmm.
We did it in Vancouver, in Calgary, Montreal, and in Toronto, and we finished pretty much at the top every time.
So, fantastic! Yeah. And how's harvest this year going? How's it going?
Harvest has been good. We're pretty much all the Chardonnays in, and we're working our way through the Merlot. So it's been an interesting fall. We had one of the coolest Septembers we've had in the last 20 years, so that's certainly slowed down the vines.
It looks like you're going to have some great sunshine for the next couple of weeks.
Oh, no, yeah, that should help bring us home, I think. Yeah, but it's been a very good harvest so far, and I think for reds it'll be especially nice. Again, it'll be a year of nice acidity and nice freshness in the wine. So I think that's kind of the hallmark, I think, for up here.
I think I saw one line go by, and I'll leave you with it, and I'll let you go. And that is, what you're trying to make is New World Chardonnay and Merlot with Old World elegance in North America. Is that the charge?
I think so. I think that's applicable, but in a lot of ways, I think the region does that for itself. I think the wines express, I really just try to let the region express itself, and it seems to fall between those two areas. There's not really anything I'm doing that's trying to say, well, this one needs to be more like West Coast in style, and this one needs to be more Bordeaux in style. It's okay. Really just letting each side express itself through a framework of the winemaking, but that's about it.
Okay, Philip, last question, and that is an overview basically about British Columbia, because you see it with different eyes, because you come from another part of the world, and then you have your experience in Sonoma. The future for the Okanagan, is it as rosy as we see written about? Is it going to be quite an interesting time for the next 5-10 years?
Oh, I think the wine industry is always an interesting time. I think the Okanagan is a very small region if you think of terms of production around the world. So I think I like to think of it that I think our best future is in terms of aiming for high quality wines. We're never going to be able to produce, flood the market with a certain price point. We don't have that scale of production. So I think if we focus on doing higher end wines, we'll get people's awareness and build a reputation for creating some really unique and high quality and world class wines. And I think that's starting to happen. And I think that should continue to happen in the next 5 to 10 years. Yeah, for sure.
I'm glad you're there, Phil. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Terry. Yeah.
His name is Philip McGann. He is the winemaker and general manager at Checkmate in the South Okanagan, the Golden Mile. And yes, they have a tasting room now. He's a little busy. You might not see Phil in it. Thank you, Phil.
Okay, thank you.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Canada's number one winery, Road 13. It's time to book your dinner with Backyard Farms on Road 13. Amazing artisan wines with 4-course meals prepared by Chef Chris Van Hooydonk of Backyard Farms. May 4, July 27, August 17, September 28, and October the 5th. All the details at road13vineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. After 6 weeks of renovation, refurbishing, kitchen and outdoor patio expansion, complete with a new outdoor kitchen and pizza oven, the Unsworth restaurant is reopened. There's a great new menu and an Easter brunch on Sunday, April 21st. All the details can be found at unsworthvineyards.com. This is the Merlot special on Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan, and who better to talk to than Jeff Harder from Ex Nihilo? I had an epiphany when I tried your Merlot a year and a half ago. I couldn't believe the possibility of Okanagan Merlot until I tasted yours. Do you know how special it is? Because you've obviously tasted around. You want to know what everybody else is making.
Well, thank you, Terry. First of all, I'm very flattered. That's very nice of you to recognize that Merlot as and get the word out. We had some secrets around here in the Okanagan, and our Merlot is one of them. It sells out every year. Comes from the South Okanagan. We're very fortunate to work with a couple growers down there that we have been for some time. And we do things a little bit different. You see the trucks, case in point right now in the Okanagan, running up and down the valley and bringing fruit in. I'm one of those guys that just likes to let that fruit hang a little bit longer. We're not going to get any, drastic heat spikes here in the Okanagan this time of year. So sugars aren't going to take away from us or take off and get away on us. And the acids, they're not going to drop too crazy. So, I always said it's like grandma's stew. You leave it in the pot an extra day or two, and we get those flavors. So that's one of our philosophies here at Ex Nihilo, is we just let that fruit hang a little bit more. You don't want overripe fruit. And, I know down in Napa, my brother always has to watch that with their heat that they're getting down there right now. But I think we have a bit of a luxury up here in the Okanagan where we can just give it an extra few days, if you will, and it just lets those berries get fuller in flavor.
Jeff Harder, Ex Nihilo. You're at Seacrest Hill Road near the Bluff, right?
Yeah, we're right there. Because we've outgrown that vineyard a little bit too, and I'm very fortunate that we get fruit from our grower there, but we've started working with another family that grows fruit down south, you know, and our growers are very important to us, and they know what we're looking for. And, you know, as much as I'd like to run around and buy up a lot of vineyard, there's just not a lot out there to buy right now. And so we've entered into some long term with some growers. We're very fortunate. And, you know, we sat down at a table and we've talked to them and said, this is where we like to go. And you know, they kind of scratch their heads when a lot of other vineyards are picked and done. But we just kind of give us a few more
hang
days
time,
here.
Hang time.
And, hang time. And again, I think that's a bit of a luxury we have in the Okanagan.
He's Jeff Harder, and he is the man behind the team at Exnahilo. I kind of get the impression that Merlot is being taken for granted, that it's always there. Yeah, okay, we'll have a Merlot, but whatever, go with this. Well, let's try this. Let's try that. There's something flashy over here. And Merlot just continues on, and I'm kind of wondering, will it come back to the prominence it had before Sideways?
I think so. You know, it's one of the big Bordeaux, and I think that it's just... I think there has always been that Merlot lover out there, and they might not have been flying the flag like they should have. But, you know, I take our Merlots down to Napa when I'm visiting family down there, and we can throw it on the table. And, boy, we can turn some heads. And I think that, you know, our own customers, when I mean that, our BC, and I'm going to say Alberta, I think they're out here supporting us. They're trying the wines, and they go, oh, and they have these aha moments. And so we're fortunate that way that we do get a lot of support. And if it starts right here at home and kind of branches out, you know, we sell every drop of our Merlot, and I know other wineries that do as well. So we're getting the support for the size of the industry we are. Our problem is we don't have enough of it. So we're going definitely in the right direction, Terry.
How many cases do you make?
Ooh, this year I think we're around this coming harvest we're planning around 2,200 cases.
2,200 cases? And what's the price point, you figure?
Oh, God, I don't do that.
What was the price point last year?
I think we're in the... But it's a good question. I think we're around that $40 mark. And,
okay. And,
you know, again, we're making an investment in barrels. And we look after our growers as well. They have to be paid well. So, you know, that's a whole other subject as cost of wine.
You bet.
And that's another day. But, it's in there and well worth it, for sure.
There's a lot more growers than there are wineries.
Yeah, and you know, some of these growers are turning their operation into wineries, and I think it's hurting some of the boutiques.
Yep.
And you know, we went through a little bit of a kind of scratching our head and going, you know, let's hope we can continue to get good fruit. And again, we've locked down with a few growers, and fortunately for us here at Exnahilo, we do have that covered. So,
okay, one more thing, and here's your last question, and that is, what's going to be the surprise release for you, just judging on the crop and the harvest and your gut feeling?
Well, again, you know, we take pride in everything here at Exnahilo, but it took me a few years back. I found a grower, again, in the South Okanagan. Took me a while to get this family. I wanted their Syrah, and we ended up getting some and got it in the bottle not too long ago, and it's just amazing. And I think that's another... Watch that varietal, and that's a grape that you can keep your eyes on here in the Okanagan, and we hope to see a little bit more of it. But that's kind of our surprise this year. But they're all good and very, very happy with where we're at in the vintage right now. So.
Jeff Harder, Exnahilo, Okanagan. Thank you for your conversation, Professor, on Merlot. Look forward to yours.
Always a pleasure, Terry. Thank you very much, and we look forward to sharing a glass or two soon with you.
This is Tasting Room Radio, a home for passionate fans of food, wine, and friends.
This is our first ever Merlot Special 2018. I'm Terry David Mulligan. Three distinct voices for you now at the Victoria Wine Festival. Peter Lindenlob knows his stuff. at the Victoria Wine Festival, he was pouring Wagner Family Merlot. Wagner Family, smack dab in the middle of the Golden Mile in Napa, one of the great wine families there, period. And their Merlot is one of the best made in Napa. Just a reminder that Wagner Family in Napa make Camus, Mirsolet, Conundrum, Imolo, and Red Schooner. And then the voice of Kane Morgan, the young man who is one of the co-owners of Rust Wine Company in the South Okanagan, used to be Rustico. And the third voice is Joseph Luckhurst, the managing partner of Row 13 on the Golden Mile.
Now, Peter, I've got to ask you this because I am doing a Merlot special.
I think
it's getting shortchanged.
Yes.
And I want to find out where it is and is it coming back? Has it been thrown in the dustbin? Whatever. Let's talk about Merlot for a second.
Sure. Unfortunately, with the wine business, a little knowledge is sometimes a dangerous thing. And so what I hear a lot of times is people will walk up to the table and say, I don't drink Merlot. And it's not, I don't believe, because they've tried 10 or 15 Merlots and they've said, this is a definitive thing I've come up with. But somebody else says it and it sounds like a cool thing. So what I want people to do is sort of open their minds to Merlot. And I think Merlot, like all great varieties, is making a comeback, as is Chardonnay.
It's cyclical.
Yeah, it's cyclical, absolutely. And when they try a product like our Emelo Merlot, and it, granted, it's $65, it ain't cheap, but it'll open their eyes as to what the possibilities of Merlot are and how great it can be.
Kane Morgan, he is the Assistant General Manager of Rust Wine Company on the Golden Mile bench. I'm going to do a Merlot special because I think it's been shortchanged in the Okanagan especially. I know it's grown, but I don't hear any glowing reviews. People aren't clamoring for Merlot, and I want to talk to the people who are committed to Merlot. What is it about Merlot and those three that you like a lot?
Well, the interesting thing about Merlot is of the Bordeaux varietals, it's one of the ones that ripens very consistently. So under the right winemaking and the right tutelage, it can make some absolutely beautifully expressive wines. I think there was a thing a few years ago when the movie Sideways came out where Everyone started to hate on Merlot a little bit.
It got bitch slapped.
A little bit. But the interesting thing is the pendulum's now swinging the other way because Merlot very often is a varietal that people really like. It's got that dark fruit, it's got that richness, that intensity, and that concentration.
Remind people what Merlot pairs with nicely, food-wise.
Any classic meat, any roasted red meats is beautiful.
Barbecue.
You think a barbecue, or you think like a Sunday roast with the Yorkshire puddings and gravy. Any classic Bordeaux food would be fantastic.
The better that sausages, we're in the golden age of sausages.
Absolutely.
I love a Merlot with sausage spices.
Well, it's funny you mention that because all summer long we do a 7-day-a-week barbecue program at the winery.
Yeah.
We offer grilled sausages that are made fresh every day from a local butcher in Penticton. And we bring in steaks of the day from Alberta, either beef tenderloin or ribeye, specifically because that type of food pairs so well with our wines.
He's Kane Morgan. He's the Assistant General Manager of Rust Wine Company on the south end of the Golden Mile Bench. I'm going to do a Merlot special. And you are, as we sat down, you said that you don't make a single varietal Merlot anymore. What's the reasoning behind that?
You know, there were a couple reasons behind not producing a single varietal Merlot. One, of course, is that, like I said, I firmly believe that Syrah is the better varietal for the Valley, and that's what I wanted to focus on. The other part is that as beautiful of a grape as it is out here and as much top-tier Merlot I've tasted out here, I just don't find it as interesting as Syrah. Syrah is something that's got, like I said, that character that is distinctly British Columbian here.
I can't wait to talk to the other Merlot makers.
I'm sure they'll disagree.
Although I do notice that you have a Cab Merlot, one of bronze.
Absolutely. That Cab Merlot actually was a wine that we made for Savon. They asked us to have a wine exclusively for them, and we built that blend with them. And it was fortunate. It was a year where we had lots of bulk Merlot sitting around, and we were able to build something that was absolutely fun.
You know, you can never have enough bulk Merlot. I like to think that it's one of the great workhorses of the Valley.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Merlot, without a doubt, is by far the most friendly grape that's grown in British Columbia. It is, every Merlot out here is rich, it's got a ton of character, nice tannin to it overall, and really nice, easy drinking wine.
But it's not Syrah.
But it's not Syrah.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. After 6 weeks of renovation, refurbishing, kitchen and outdoor patio expansion, complete with a new outdoor kitchen and pizza oven, the Unsworth restaurant is reopened. There's a great new menu and an Easter brunch on Sunday, April 21st.
All the details can be found at unsworthvineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. Easter long weekend and all weekend long, it's Full Frontal Frenzy 2019. The new vintages from the Screaming Frenzy line of sexiness. There's a 2018 Pinot Gris, Sauv Blanc, the Pastel Pachyderm, which is their rosé, the 2017 Pinot Noir, and they introduce Crikey the Kangaroo. That's their new Shiraz. All the details at thehatchwines.com. Welcome back. This is our attempt on Tasting Room Radio to examine Merlot in, around the world, but basically in British Columbia and specifically in the Okanagan. And you can't talk about Merlot in British Columbia, in the Okanagan or the South Okanagan, without talking to Stags Hollow. Larry Gerlis is on the phone. He is the co-owner. Have you always had a love affair with Merlot?
I'd say yes. When we bought our property in 1992, it was misplanted on a very warm site. And in the 3 years that we had to think about things, we made a decision to go with Merlot and Pinot Noir on that southwest-facing block.
You took your chasselas and used it as rootstock, right?
Yes. So we grafted that over and then doubled density by interplanting. It was a very poorly planted vineyard in the sense of layout. So we came up with the Geneva double system that avoided ripping up the whole vineyard and allowing us to double the density of the vineyard without destroying the infrastructure.
And what clone was it? Was it Pomerol?
No, I don't even remember the clones. We picked the initial ones we planted in 1993 as a little test area came from the research station in Summerland. So that sort of what started the whole process was just planting a little Merlot to test out to see if it would grow and how it would show itself. As it turns out, in those first four rows, they didn't just give us cuttings of Merlot, they also gave us cuttings of Cabernet Sauvignon.
I saw that note.
So we didn't discover that for a few years and then went, we have something other than Merlot in those first four rows, and we determined that it was Cabernet Sauvignon.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's turned out to be a blessing in disguise because it creates an interesting structure in the Merlot that we always co-ferment.
We're talking about Stags Hollow and specifically the Renaissance Merlot, which is an amazing success story and one of the feature wines in John Schreiner's book, Icons, which is a great read, my friends. And it's interesting to go back and look at the tasting notes all the way back to the beginning. And initially, the blend wasn't noted. What was noted were the barrels, new, old, French, American, whatever. And then about 2006, we started to see the percentage of Merlot in there, and it was 95, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it would range. We actually didn't do a plant count, and then the percentage would vary depending on how much of the main block of Merlot, which was 100% Merlot, that we actually blended back into the first four rows. So there's about 15% actual Cab Sauv in those first four rows. So if a particular year was built primarily around those first four rows and maybe a little bit of the main block of Merlot, then that percentage could be as high as 10 or 12%.
Right. Now,
typically around 8.
Larry, I should have asked you the question that I proposed right off the top. Do you think Merlot itself is getting shortchanged in British Columbia?
How do I answer that?
I'm talking about perception. I know it's the most planted. I'm just talking about perception, and especially not only the winemakers and wineries' perception, but those of us buying the wines.
I think so, and that's for a couple of reasons. Obviously, for what happened in the movie Sideways a long time ago,
sure.
That really hurt Merlot for a little while, and we noticed a huge change in sales temporarily. I don't think that has an impact anymore. I think it is related more to people's tastes and how we grow and what we do with Merlot in the Valley and the perception of Merlot, because I think Merlot seems to vary from sometimes pretty simple plush wines to very big structured wines. which is what we make.
It's a grape that can be, I'll use the word abused, because you can grow it in bulk and you can make really crappy Merlot and sell it as Merlot. Those of you who are trying to do a small lot, a very specific site Merlot, are the ones we want to be listening to.
Yeah, and what I'm very happy about is the fact that the site we have here is all gravel, southwest facing, and I just can't get the clusters and the berries large. They all tend to be smaller, very intense berries and clusters year after year, and there's great consistency. And it's just the terroir that delivers what I get.
Has your Merlot always been plummy, cherry, coffee, spice, leathery, sort of? Has it been consistent?
Very consistent. I mean, we've had some difficult years like 2010 and 11. They're more structured, not quite as fruit forward, but they're still now aging into some beautiful wines.
Let's do an overview here for a second and step out of the Stag's Hollow box. Merlot in the Okanagan, is it being grown properly? Are we still seeing remnants of people who are just slapping it around and putting it in a barrel and bottling it?
Of course. I mean, you get the whole gambit or range of growers that overproduce it. And then it's price point driven. So wineries that want to make a cheaper wine will make a cheaper version of Merlot, and that'll be people's perception of Merlot that buy those Merlots. And then our best-selling wine for the last month in the wine shop has been our Renaissance Merlot. And that's not just dollars. That's number of bottles out the door.
How many cases are you making?
We only do approximately 200 to 300 cases.
What's the price point on that bottle?
Before tax, $35.
Okay. And how many different sites are you pulling from?
Just our one site.
Here. That's it?
Yeah. For our Renaissance series, it's always vineyard wine. Always.
Okay. What's on the shelves now?
The 2015 Renaissance Merlot.
Okay. And how goes the 2016?
That was a tough vintage, I think, from my perspective. It caught us by surprise in terms of the volume of grapes that were out there that didn't look like there was that kind of volume. So the wines, we've managed to find several barrels that we're happy with and make another Renaissance, quite honestly, but it wasn't the stellar years like we've had in 2015, which was just incredible.
And how's this harvest?
And 2017 was great. 2018 is going to be great. It's going to be a very different year. We're getting climate change impacting this valley every year now, and we don't know what we're going to get.
Is that in a good way?
No.
Okay.
No, it's in a negative way, because we're getting the variability at either end, spring and fall, that we haven't had to the degree we've had it in the last few years.
It's going to take adjustments.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, you have to be a lot more diligent in your vineyard. And that's tough to do if you've had a great early spring, and then you go, oh, it's going to be an easy year, and then, you know, late September falls apart on you, and that's a key time for getting those grapes nice and ripe in the right way.
Larry Gerellis, the co-owner and the man leading the team at Stag's Hollow. Can you define Merlot at Okanagan Falls as opposed to South Okanagan or North?
That's a tough question. I know what our Merlot is like relative to any other Merlot, even in this area. And for whatever reason, again, we get a very beautifully structured, rich, dense Merlot. I'm very proud of it. So,
yeah, I can tell. I can tell from the tasting notes, because it's black, but not quite.
You know, that's right. I mean, it's interesting, because when we process it and we crush the stem, it goes into our one-ton fermenters. It's just a pile of berries and no juice. It's just crazy to see that sometimes, how little juice there is initially.
So it's concentrated.
Yes.
Wow. Now, as you know, we're heading for the judgment of BC, and this year it's a bubble and blends. And do you consider your Stag's Hollow Renaissance Merlot to be a blend?
A little bit of Cabernet Sauvignon in there, but it's always under the 15% rule for VQA purposes, we label it as a Merlot, and we want to stay with that. We are now, I have planted some Cabernet Franc in the vineyard.
Okay.
And took out a couple of rows of Merlot to do that, so that we're now creating a Meritage blend, all co-fermented, so it's now going to become part of the same block, and we'll have a Renaissance Merlot and a Renaissance Meritage coming out of the vineyard now.
Hmm. Okay. And one more thing, and that's about us out here, the buyers, the fans, the wine fans. Are we going to personally bring Merlot back, or will it take the wineries to actually get our attention with exceptional vintages?
You know what? I think that the public tends to follow trends, whether it's lighter wines now, rosés. I mean, everybody was struggling with rosé just a few years ago, and now all of a sudden you can't keep enough on the shelf. So I have no idea. Sometimes you have no idea what drives the public. All I know is when you build really good wines, people that love Merlot will still buy Merlot, and they have for years and years and years. And, of course, if we can take that up another notch across the valley, Merlot will be, you know, it does really, really well in the valley. It grows really well. It ripens really well. It does everything you want it to do, as opposed to, say, Cabernet Sauvignon, which is a challenge in many years in the valley. So I think it's a really good grape for the valley, and there's no reason why we can't do it really well.
I rest my case. Thank you, Larry. Appreciate it very much. Good luck down the road.
Thank you very much, Terry, and thank you for calling and asking for my opinion.
Welcome to Tasting Room Radio, celebrating all the great things we love about food and wine.
My name is Terry David Mulligan. What's that term they use for you? Senior winemaker?
Yeah.
Rob Summers is the senior winemaker at Hester Creek on the Golden Mile, South Okanagan. Can I ask you about a couple of your wines? I know you love talking about your wines, so let's just get to it. The 2016 Character Red. This Character Red is a blend, and I see the term used here is Italian Old Vines Merlot, Petit Verdot, some Malbec, and Syrah. Can you define the Italian Old Vines Merlot?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's one of the big drivers of this blend. It's one of the original plantings, again, that was planted with Block 2 Merlot, but we're trying to trace it back, but as most as we can determine, it come from northern Italy. And the interesting thing is that it looks like Merlot, the leaves and the berries, but when you ferment it, it's very distinctively an old world charm to it, almost like I want to say Syrah, but it's got a really peppery, earthy character to it.
Bless that pepper, Rob.
You know, but it's got a really, I mean, I know it's, I call it an old world character to it. It's kind of got that earthiness, and it's not from... It's the grapes every year. Like when I first started fermenting, I'm like, that can't be Merlot, right? And then we're looking at the leaves and the grapes, and we're like, no, it's Merlot. We just don't know what clone it is right now. So we are actually going to research that this year and send off some samples for genetic analysis to find out what clone it actually is. But I that's one of the big drivers on that for me. And then, of course, Petit Verdot and Syrah. I mean, the Syrah just plays really nicely into that Italian old-style Merlot. And then the Petit Verdot lifts it up with the color and acid and the sort of violet fragrant. Just got to throw a little bit of Malbec in there just to say we can right? So we
because you can, yes. I have a price point of $20.95. Do you concur?
That's correct.
Exactly.
It's $18.99 in the liquor store.
Excellent. The 2015 Block 2 Reserve Merlot, speaking of Merlot, some of the oldest vines, early 70s. Are these the Merlot vines you're talking about, or a different set?
Different. There's two blocks. So we have an Italian, we call the old Italian Merlot block, and then we have Block 2, which is different. I don't know why it's a different clone or a different type of wine. I mean, they were planted back in, that block was actually planted in 68, 69.
Right.
So I don't know, but it's more Merlot style. So, you know, you get that nice, ripe, plummy character, more fruit-forward kind of wine than you do with the Italian Merlot.
There's that sagebrush is in there that we know is a distinct if you keep an ear and eye and a taste bud open for it, it's in there as well. But there's some plum in there. I love the plum.
Yeah.
I had it with a stew. Is that, mm-hmm. that okay for you?
Yeah, for sure. I love stew, especially this time of the year.
And I had it with Moroccan bread, which is made over here. And the Moroccan bread has cumin in it.
Okay.
Love that.
Yeah, that'll work really nice. No, I love that plummy character that we get here at Hester Creek and quite a few other great Merlots in the valley get that nice plummy, juicy character to them.
So we're talking about the 2015 Block 2 Reserve Merlot from Hester Creek. What's the price point, Rob?
That's $25.99.
Excellent. Rob Summers is the senior winemaker at Hester Creek on the Golden Mile, South Okanagan.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. Their restaurant features remarkable seasonal and local ingredients. They're open Wednesday through Sunday from 11 a.m. for lunch and dinner. Make this the year you revisit Vancouver Island Terroir. Well, I hope you liked the Merlot special. And once again, I thank the winemaker who turned me on to B.C. Merlot, Ian Sutherland, at the original Poplar Grove on the Naramata Bench. Next week, we're going to check out the new Freeform Wines at Okanagan Crush Pad with Christine Coletta. And also, we'll check out the Okanagan Crush Pad launch of Shane Taylor's Wine Campus Pinot Noir. He won Sommelier of the Year. He gets to make his own wine. And Shane is about to release his wine that he made called Dilettante, a Garnet Valley Pinot Noir 2017. And in a couple of weeks, it'll be my pleasure to give you a backstage, behind-the-scenes report on the 2018 Judgment of BC. Just a reminder that we are podcast on Apple Podcasts and Google Play Music, and you can stream the show on the website, tastingroomradio.com. Thank you. Cheers. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. Easter long weekend and all weekend long, it's Full Frontal Frenzy 2019. The new vintages from the Screaming Frenzy line of sexiness. There's a 2018 Pinot Gris, Sauv Blanc, the Pastel Pachyderm, which is their rosé, the 2017 Pinot Noir, and they introduce Crikey the Kangaroo. That's their new Shiraz. All the details at thehatchwines.com.